Hey everyone, welcome. I'm gonna wait a few more minutes to make sure folks get here. And if you don't mind, Chuck, I'll facilitate since you've done the last two meetings.
Not at all.
Awesome.
I don't know why last time I just jumped in.
It's all good. I just wanna make sure I bear my share of the responsibilities and burden to facilitate. So yeah, let's wait for a few more folks to join. I'll give it a few more minutes and then we'll just start the meeting. I think we have two items that we should talk about. Oh, who's calling me? All right, great. Give it like another minute and then I'll start the meeting. Anyone else we should wait for? Mark? No, right?
Well, we have quorum whenever you'd like to start.
Yeah, let's get started. All right. Welcome to the August 10th Council Affairs meeting, y'all. So we'll do really quick introductions. I'll go down the list of folks that I see on my screen. Just introduce yourselves real briefly. So let's start with Irma.
You caught me off guard. Irma Ferrato, council member. I don't even know who I am.
All right, Matt.
Matt Gelmaker, council member.
Cool. Jesse.
Working with two screens. Jesse Murphy, council member.
Kevin.
Kevin Hutchcroft, HHS.
Beth?
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
Jackson.
Jackson Bowman, council member.
Chuck?
Chuck Adams, co-chair of the committee.
All right, and Dean.
Dean Goodwin, HIV Health Services. Hi, everyone.
Cool. And then I have Mark, of course.
Mark Muller, Council Staff.
Dave.
David Jordan, Council Staff.
And then I'd like to welcome Kira to the meeting.
Hi, everyone. Kira, Council Staff.
And then I have Chris here.
Hi, everyone. Chris Kent. I'm from the Office of AIDS, and I'm the Part B rep.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. I think that's everybody, right? Yes, yes, yes. Fantastic. So let's go ahead and review and approve the August 10th agenda. I think this kind of sort of went out a little teeny bit. I think it was yesterday, the day before yesterday, with some additions by Mark.
Sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to share screen on my new laptop. It seems different than what I'm used to. Whoa. Okay. Forgive me here. I'm just... can't believe I'm learning this all over again. I swear that this is a different process now. Huh, okay. So I'm sharing screen. Oh, do you all see that?
Yes.
Okay, oh, you also see my desktop background. Don't be scared.
Cool.
So here are the minutes. I mean, not the minutes, the agenda for today. Derp. And so you'll see it's pretty straightforward with a couple big ticket items. We'll do a brief review of the work plan after all the pro forma. There's been a little some changes, and then we have a carry forward allocation, which I'll share screen on eventually, and our ARES presentation, which will be a quick review, of course, of our usual annual update. And that's pretty much it, as well as a request from council staff to move next month's meeting at the very end.
Okay, great. Thank you. So let's go ahead. If there are no objections, I'd like to approve that by consensus. Awesome. And then next is a review of the draft minutes from the last meeting from last month. That would have been July 13th.
All right, let me figure that out. Get rid of this, I guess.
Cool. So those are meetings.
Yep, got it. I'm just, bear with me. This update doesn't allow me to actually look at all of the documents that I've opened on my screen. So it's like manual. All right. Here we are. You'll see the committee's members present and absent, none. The top is as well as just others present, including presenters, all of our basic pro forma. Then we had, of course, the trans community's update.
It just has the members present and absent duplicated twice.
Oh, thank you.
Or just, I guess it's just the present. It's like they're twice.
Yeah, Akira, when you do the minutes, you can just take that second council members present out, unnecessary. That can be put in if there are members of the council who are attending the meeting who are not committee members. And I'll send, if you don't have it already, I'll send you the list of committee members so that you can track that for future meetings.
Yes, thank you. So if there are no other amendments or friendly amendments to the Council Affair meeting minutes, I'd like to approve those by consensus as well. All right, great, thank you. All right, any announcements? Oh, welcome, Ken. Okay, so there's no announcements. I'd like to actually welcome Ken. Ken, quick introduction.
Ken Pierce, council member.
Thank you, Ken. Welcome back. Awesome. Any public comments? No, I don't think so.
Today. Oh, if we can go back to announcements, I wanted to respond to a query from Jesse Murphy from last month's meeting. This might be the best place to fit it because it's not actually on the agenda. And that was around two different topics. One was more information around the shelter in place hotel transitions, which is certainly an ongoing topic. If I recall, Kevin spoke to that at length. And so what I would, I guess, suggest is that Jesse and Kevin, if you can connect, perhaps Kevin can go over how you know what he updated us on when it comes to shelter in place hotels. Although to do a quick summary, I think the main point was that we were only in some ways responsible for a small part of this system. So there's only so much that HHS could actually comment on. And then the second thing was your query about how is DPH working with the police system to better enact other service positions when working with members of the public. So what I'm thinking of doing, and we can punt this over to the work plan discussion, is maybe inviting Mylene Loughran to come speak to the council on that very topic. So hopefully that gets you sort of partway to a response to your I think very important questions, Jess.
Cool, thank you. And then, you know what, I'll talk, who's our mayor's office of housing rep?
That'll be Bruce Ito from the community, right? MOHCD.
Yeah, because there's been, so a lot of the sort of like the little camps that came out that were sort of like developed during the pandemic are now gone. And I've been asked by someone in the community, what happened to everybody? Because they're not present in the city anymore. So I was like, well, this is actually an opportune moment to have that conversation about like what's happening, because I don't know either. All right, cool. Thank you. So I guess next topic is work plan review and update.
All right, Mark. Share screen again. Okay, I can do this. All right, there it is. And so you'll see that there's been some switches around. So for August this month, we are moving forward with our ARIES report. The data will be, a number of months behind, but it is still our first ARIES report we've had in a year and a half or so. I'll go over our basic annually mandated HRSA mandate update so that you all are on the same page with what we are actually mandated to do as a council. We will have the carry forward allocation, which is something that we're seeing for the first time today. And then we have to do our annual business around Orion White Part A eligibility and definitions. We are not going to have an ETE update. That has actually been moved since I updated this. So I'll move that now. I don't know where that will go. So I'll put that for now here in October. And since we have not made any plans around it getting to zero, I'm going to just, for now, if you don't mind, put that to a place of consideration in November. And so those were some of the shifts. The ET update joined the August meeting fairly recently, and then it was just as quickly pulled off because not ready yet. So we want to have that obviously when we're ready. I'm not sure it'll fit in October with these two county reports that happened from Matt and Cicely, but I think it could. Those tend to be shorter reports, but they sometimes involve pretty robust discussion. This might seem like a heavy meeting, but it's not. My presentation on the HRSA mandate is a short one. Carry forward allocation, that's usually the discussion happens on committee level. And this is really just basically an update of our, to be in alignment with whatever the new update for federal poverty level is. So these three should not take up a lot of time. So it should give us a good amount of time to really hear, process, and ask about the data in the ARIES report. And then in September, that's basically stayed the same. The only thing that is a question mark is if we'll have the needs assessment ready by then. And so I'll put that in there. I should check in soon, like today, with Dean and John Ainsley to see if the service summary sheets will be ready for September. And then obviously in November, we're not doing all of this. We're gonna have to pick and choose and just figure that out. And of course, these are our leftover topics. I'd like to put in, if you all don't mind, the topic that Jesse brought up, which is, I don't know what you'd call it. Is it police reform or is that too politically charged a phrase to use? How would you phrase that, Jesse?
Maybe like police alternatives. I mean, that's, and I realize Arlene's doing some work with that, but there's the other initiatives that live kind of outside of the HHS and CHIP rule to like an issue by the mayor's office. I just feel like it impacts all of our clients.
I think this is such an important and also very recent development that maybe we should even consider it as one of our go-tos for November, right? I think people would have a lot of interest in that.
Thank you.
Okay, so we can figure out November later. We definitely have some time, but this is what the current work plan looks like. Co-chair election. That's fun. Any questions or thoughts on this? Let me do a gallery view so I can see all of your bright and shining faces. Or the icon that represents you, or simply your name. For those of us who are shy. Any questions, thoughts? No? Looks good? Well, this is a nice short agenda item. Stopping share.
Great. Thanks for that, Mark. And I saw that Kaiser was up there. If we go that way, let me know.
Oh, don't worry. I will be letting you know for sure. You'll be literally the first to know.
What do you guys want to know? Anyways, okay, great. Thanks. Great. So the next topic we have is, and we're actually ahead of schedule too, is carry forward allocation. Who would that be?
That's Dean, but I can share screen as well if you think I can just share right off the bat, Dean, or did you want to preamble at all? Okay, I'll share off the bat.
Share and I'll preamble, ramble, and explain it to folks a bit. So Saj, our counterpart in the business office of budget and finance, just reported our final expenditures for the Ryan White Part A grant for fiscal year 2021. And this is the amount of funding we have available unspent dollars. It's less than in previous years. Probably from an overreaction on our side. We're capped at 5% of our formula allocation as far as unspent funds. We've never exceeded that, but there is potential penalty of future funding if that occurs. So this last year during COVID, everything was impacted. A lot of providers had the PPP loans. Early invoicing patterns looked really low. We sent the communication out through Happen, right after a Happen meeting, to encourage providers to, if they had PPP loans and had savings and salaries, to look at utilizing a contract modification to add budget line items or remove large amounts of funding. Later in the year, I also did an analysis of total dollars invoiced compared to total number of months which had been invoiced out. Combine that into a factor that could estimate potential unspent dollars, and sent that to all the providers that had a potential significant amount of unspent money and asked them to redirect that. I really didn't want us to go over the 5%. So we really, really didn't. We came in a little lower than usual. Usually our carry forward is higher, 300,000 to 400,000. It's lower this year. About half of it is from MAI funds. So we have to track and report the Part A and the MAI separately, and those requests for funding are separate. So I've indicated that here in this analysis. MAI is Minority AIDS Initiative funding. It's part of our Part A grant. There's a portion of it that's earmarked as MAI funds, and it's distributed based on a formula like the Part A in many ways. So you see here, we have 128,265 left unspent from regular total Part A funding, and specifically within Part A MAI, we have an additional 123,739, or a total of $252,004. Our recommendation, and this is an opportunity for discussion, but just based on carry forward categories historically, things that work well as one-time funds as a carry forward request, and also looking at the client need in the HIV system of care since the beginning of the pandemic. We try to look at those things that have been in high demand. So this proposal would allocate the entire $128,265 in general Part A funding to emergency financial assistance grants. There's been a great increase in demand of those from since the beginning of COVID because of the economic impact of that. Within that, we would indicate $25,000 as a ballpark. We could look at setting that higher if the council would like, of a specific target for senior clients and long-term survivors based on the needs assessment from 1920. We did this last year. We gave a total amount to emergency financial assistance grants and asked that they carve out a certain amount for eyeglasses and hearing aids and other costs related to people my age and above within the system of care. The other remaining portion of that, the $123,739, we would utilize for client incentive vouchers. Also in higher demand this last year, especially the food vouchers and the taxi scripts. So that's the total of the breakdown. There's a little bit more information. If you could scroll down a little bit, Mark, could run over that with the rest of the document. So the emergency financial assistance grants is just described here and why we're applying this. So we'll also put that in the justification to HRSA, explaining that this has been a high impact during the COVID pandemic for everything from basic living expenses and eviction prevention. Also in the last year, we with the other additional funding, we had some general fund funding and also some Dream Keeper initiative funding from the mayor's office that we added to this and asked that there be some funding made available for tech-related expenses to help clients be better able to engage in telehealth appointments or virtual support services like support groups and connecting with their case managers and things like that. And then again, here's the long-term survivors and seniors with their unique financial assistance items such as hearing aid, glasses, and other senior-related expenses. Food security was something we funded last year, which is an issue. We have some Part B one-time funds, and the large food contract with the provider that we have is Part B funded. So we were allocating that. It's almost $25,000 as one-time funding to help more with food needs of clients. And then here's a little description of the client incentives. Mostly it's for Safeway and fast food vouchers that we'd be looking at, and definitely the taxi scripts that help people travel safely during pandemic and avoid exposure, keeping people off public transportation as we're able. That's it. I'm happy to answer any questions if anybody has or provide more detail.
Thanks for that, Dean, actually. The one question that did come up was just, and this was being answered, is just Ken asked if MIA funds are limited or for specific categories to clients, and Beth and Kevin are answering that question. Kevin says MAFCF funds must be spent on MAI, not technically limited to any category, but as a practical matter, they are limited to a one-time expense. The follow-up to that is, how much do we have banked for vouchers, including those purchased by DPH rollover funds?
So we buy the vouchers all at once at the end of the fiscal year based on the carry forward you allocate here and also from unspent administrative funds that we have from Part A, and we buy those. Last year, we started the process in December. And had all of those in hand by April and May. In previous years, we would give it out all at once, pretty much. We would have one large allocation process for everyone would request the vouchers they needed for the year. When we went through the experience of the controller's office audit, which of our voucher process with in light of the new DPH voucher policy, it lasted almost 2 years, and it was a lot of work, and there were a lot of policy changes that came out of that. One of those, which is a big one, is to not give new vouchers of any kind until that program or agency is specifically out of those. So otherwise, only replenishing when they're deleted. So with that, we're not giving them out all out at the beginning of the year. So most of what we purchased last year, we've just started giving out here in the last couple months. Another part of our process was to do site visits for everyone that had vouchers within their programs, giving them out, going through the inventory, counting it, going through a lot of questions and looking at the process. And we're doing that virtually this year because we're not doing in-person or on-site site visits. So that has slowed the process down. Offhand, I don't know how many we have on hand, Ken, but most of what we bought last year remains and continues to be distributed. I just gave a bunch out last week, and I'll have more providers coming in next week, I believe, to pick up some too. It's sort of a shifting amount, depending on when you look at it.
Okay. And then Jackson also asked that the housing-related emergencies is part of the emergency financial assistance grant, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't feel comfortable answering that. But
no worries. And I'm sorry. I see the questions pop up briefly on my screen, and then I'm used to MS Teams, not Zoom. Here it is.
I'm constantly talking to that office every day. Lee Harrington and I are tight. Anyways, so the other question, the question that I have actually is the food assistance line item you have there. So if that's what's moving forward with sort of the pandemic, the way it's looking like right now, you know, I know it's a one-time thing. Is there a possibility of doing that again, or is it something that is just sort of off the table for now until we see how things pan out?
For food, you mean?
Yeah.
This will expend all the current grant dollars that we have, right, NY Part A and B. We do often lately have some general fund unspent toward the end of the general fund fiscal year that we typically add to emergency financial assistance grants or vouchers if we need to, based on what the need is and what's available. We'll look at food for that later this year as well. We gave them quite a bit of extra funding last year of the COVID dollars and of the Part B supplemental we had. But those are typically the three things that we look at when we have savings that are one-time, short-term, and need to be turned around quickly: emergency financial assistance grants, food, and vouchers, because those get pretty directly to the client and are pretty quick to put in the contract and modify and spend down.
Yeah, I mean, just from my experience professionally, the biggest referrals we have is to the food assistance, the food delivery, and then rental assistance, rental emergency. That's all it is every day, boom, 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 you know.
Yeah.
So those are the ones that during the pandemic, especially with like unemployment, EDD being so unstable right now, and then, you know, things are not opening up again. I mean, people are being hired back at like part-time, like 3 days a week, super part-time. It's just not paying the bills. And so we are a little bit concerned because, you know, we can help, you know, we refer people out, but it's not sustainable in the long term. And now with the sort of Delta variant, it's a little bit sort of like, oh, now things are really not really opening up right now. So just an FYI, I thought I'd put that in there, that these are really important funds. And I know they're really small comparatively to sort of the medical system, but they're really, really crucial at this point.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Yeah. Any other questions or input? For Dean right now, I think we're supposed to vote on this at some time, and I know Matt had to step away, but I think we have to put forward if there's no other sort of alterations, we just sort of put forward a motion, right, Mark, to accept this as given, or we can also alter it and then put forward that motion. But this is what Dean is presenting now. If there's any other questions or any ideas of how we want to see this differently, I think for now is the time to speak up about it. And then once we do put a motion forward, we can have conversations about it again, and then we'll vote. It's not the finalized thing because this still has to go to steering, and then of course it'll go to the full council. But at this point, this is where the council affairs gets to put in their 2 cents.
If I could just add, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not coming from just me. It's from HIV Health Services, and I discussed and reviewed this with Beth and Kevin's input, and they helped create this document. So it was a group venture, something that we worked on broadly here within the HIV Health Services office.
Dean, I love how you always share credit. You are like the most community-minded person, whether it's macro or micro. Thumbs up, my friend.
Unfailingly complimentary. By the way, if you guys like this recommendation, then I was very involved. If you do not like it, then I had nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
All right. If there's no further conversation about this or questions or any ways people want to see it differently, I'd like to ask somebody to put a motion on the table.
A motion, this is Matt. I motion that we accept this recommendation for carry forward.
Second.
Great, awesome. So now, is there any conversation about any sort of conversation about the motion on the floor?
And just for the recording, it looks like Paul Harkin has joined the meeting. Welcome, Paul. Oops.
Sorry, guys. My meeting previously run over.
No worries.
No worries. Thank you, Paul. All right. If there's no more conversation, we have to vote, right? And that involves money, so it has to be a vote by name.
Yep. So I can do a roll call vote now. And then Kira, I'll send you the roll call with votes in a subsequent email to you. So the motion on the floor is the recommendations as listed by and developed by multiple people at HHS. David Gonzalez.
Yes, of course.
Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Jesse Murphy.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Kevin Hutchcroft.
Do I have a vote on this?
You can abstain. Many do when it comes to many other DPH reps have, but it's up to you.
For now, I guess I'll abstain. I may have to check in with Dean on this one.
Paul Harkin.
Yes.
Chris Kent.
I think I'll abstain.
Jack Bowman.
Yes.
And Matt Gelbaker.
Yes.
Motion carries with 2 abstentions. This will now move to membership on Thursday and then follow up to steering in full council. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all. All right. So next we have the ARIES presentation. I don't know who from HHS.
I think Beth mentioned that she'll be sharing screen, and I think a combination of Dean and Beth will be going over the review.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, and once I share, I can't see you. So speak up. I can't see you. Zoom is better. Okay, sorry, not all of you. How does that look for people? Is the sizing good? Oops, I'm sorry, I'm not on the first page. That might help.
It's good.
Okay, great. And I think we're gonna split it. Dean doing the first 11 slides and me doing the second 10. And yeah, Dean will give the overview that this is not the new version of the presentation. So comments.
Yeah, thank you, Beth. I'd also like to start by announcing, we sent an announcement out to all the ARIES users and to the State Office of AIDS that we work with very closely on ARIES, but with the retirement of Joseph Chetre, he was part of the ARIES team that meets weekly here, usually within within HHS. Beth has stepped into that role, replacing Joseph's functions in the ARIES team. and is now supervising for Anne Maria, and is a great addition to Aries. She's already done a lot of work with us in Aries. Beth coordinates and manages the import of data from the DPH systems from Epic into Aries, does the mapping for that, and she's helped us work with the State Office of AIDS to develop a new performance objectives report function to replace the old ones that were deteriorating and not filtering and sorting the way they were supposed to. This new report is very awesome. We're very excited about rolling that out soon, and I just wanted to acknowledge that and welcome Beth to Aries and thank her for all of her work on this. So this is the presentation that you all got 2 years ago. We didn't do it last year, not because of the pandemic so much, but because the DPH system, the electronic medical record, we shifted from eClinicalWorks to Epic. And the first wave of that began in August of 2019, about the time we presented this to you all 2 years ago. Over that time, we've been working to fine-tune the replacement importation process. At this point last year, we really didn't have the data from, you know, all the DPH clinics and the Ward 86 programs in Aries to present it at summit time. We got it done later in the winter for reporting in our RSR, but now we're there. We're updating and importing that information. So this structure is from the last report. The structure and layout and sequence will be pretty much the same based on your feedback and requests and questions. The data will look a little different. So we'll just walk you through each section of this. And then if you have any questions as Beth or I present, just put it in chat or raise your hand or interrupt us, I guess. Next slide. So this is a bit of the background that Flora Maria will go over, which talks about how many active users we have and how they do trainings. We'll update this. One thing that changed in the last 2 years is that all of this is now done online, and Flora Maria were really adaptive and quick to create that process for new or returning Aries users to get their training and take the test in order to get the certification. So there will be more information here. Next slide. Here's more of the background. Again, there'll be more here, and we'll also probably talk about the changes due to the import. I believe that will go in here and what we use the data for. Next slide. This is notes on the data. This is just sort of background, like what the term is that we're looking at. What we'll be presenting is data from March 1 of 2020 through February 28th of 2021. And it will be all of HHS funding within our system of care, Part A, Part B, C, and general fund. We don't fund Part D. That money from HRSA goes directly to Ward 86, but it's in our system and serves a lot of our clients. So we report that data to you all. There'll be more information here. We are seeing that the total UDC is probably going to go down. So we'll report that and talk about that with you all when we report that later.
Hey,
on
Dean.
Next slide. Yes.
Dean, it's Matt. So with the funding, hey, you might want to add MAI in there too. That's what I sent Flora Maria. I included our Part A, B, and MAI.
Okay, thank you.
We added it into our data, but we haven't fixed the slide yet. Thank you for mentioning.
We're adding the EHE too. But yeah, so we'll update that to include that. Thank you, Mark. Matt, next page. More notes on the data, just sort of talking about the some information that helps you how to put it into perspective and what some of the terms refer to. Next slide. More notes on the data, more of the same. We'll talk about the unknown. What we started doing in the last couple of years of reports is pulling the unknown out, because then that gives you a better representation of how the known data is split, especially when there's multiple variables. And we thought that's just a helpful way of sharing that information with you. Next slide, Beth. the data graphic that the numbers will be different, but it will show the total number of folks in our three-county EMA living with HIV. We pull that information from the previous year's Brian White Part A grant application that that is pulled together from all three counties. And then the inner number is the total number of those clients that are within our Ryan White in all HHS funded area system. And then the smaller number in the middle are the number of those that were engaged in HHS funded primary care. Next slide. EMA factoids. We just sort of break down a little bit of total demographic percent and information data for the three counties in total and for each of these three counties. And we give the total number, the number of clients that are new, and the number that were reported in Aries as passing away in the previous year. It is not a complete record or number. The EPI runs a much better information of that. What is in Aries is just what people put in Aries and doesn't reflect everything. And Ken has a question. I'm sorry. I didn't see that come up. Ken, what was your question?
Oh, Ken's question was if there are any care providers who are not Aries providers.
And you are care providers that aren't Aries providers. The only thing that's not, that's a good question, Ken. The only thing that we fund that isn't in Aries is a food bank that doesn't deliver to clients, but just to residential programs, and that's general fund funded. And that's it. Everything else is here in Aries. And the only reason that's not in is because it's not tied to any specific direct client that provider knows of. Okay, next slide, please. So then it's the, then we start doing some demographic information. This is the breakout of by gender. The gender designations are reflective of how they're identified and named in the area system. You'll see up above the header here, we just have the percent of unknown, but we've removed it. So again, that you're just seeing what it's down here in the total data. We have an N that shows a number for each county, and then the breakout by percent of each county. And this pattern of how that information is presented will repeat with different demographics. Next slide. This is the trend of gender demographic within the area system in past years. You'll see it's very consistent. There's not a lot of fluctuation here. Next slide. And this is by race, again, as named and represented in Aries and broken out by county. And that's my last slide, I think. The next one, I hand off to Beth.
Any questions currently waiting, or shall we go to the next slide? I can't see the chat. Okay, we'll press on, but interrupt if needed. The next demographic slide is age for the eligible metropolitan area. And these categories aren't all of equal band of size. So the 0 to 24 years of age is a very, very small proportion of our EMA. 25 to 44 is a wider range than most. And that's partly why the N is bigger. 45 to 49 is when we start getting a little tighter in the age ranges. And that's nearly 11% of clients. 50 to 54 is about 17%. 55 to 59 is about 16%. 60 to 64 is close to 13%. And 65 and up is also greater than 13%. And then the demographics are a little different by county. And those breakouts are shown here. And then looking same by county and then overall EMA breakout for the percentage of the federal poverty line. And 138% is a cut point we use a lot. It's also the Medi-Cal cut point for eligibility with no share of cost. So most of our clients clients reported in Aries have 76% are within the 138% threshold. Another nearly 15% are up to 250% of the poverty line. 4.8% up to 400% of the poverty line. We still break it out at 401 and above, even though our eligibility has changed, you know, since this last presentation to 500. So we may need to think about that. And that's for both local San Francisco funds and Ryan White Part. It's A and B based on the council vote. The pie charts are rather significant. There's San Mateo and Marin have slightly more higher income people. It's the main demographic difference, but still the majority in every county is under 138%. And hey, currently, Beth, yeah.
Could you go back to page 12? Ken had a question about the breakout of the age. I just saw that in the pop-up. Thank you.
You know, I didn't mean to stop. You could answer the questions afterwards. It's just that it doesn't make sense to me under the breakdown for age for an N of 906 to be 12% and an N of 836 to be 13%.
That does not make sense. There is an error there. We will run that down and not repeat that in the next presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen.
I mean, one thing that happens, this one doesn't mention it, probably because it's not relevant. For some of the other things, for insurance especially, you can be in more than one category, but you can't be in more than one age. So it probably has to do with how the formula was set up for other things, not translating well to this with no overlap, but not sure that tracks statistically, but we'll make sure that we'll double check all this. And I think we did that one. So current living situation is reported in ARES, and ARES uses rather large buckets. There is further gradation, but the best filled out piece of information is whether people are in stable housing, temporary housing, or unstable housing. And the majority of the clients, about 2/3, are in stable housing. Close to 1/4 are in temporary housing, and 5.8% are in unstable housing. And San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin do vary pretty significantly on this one, with actually more people in stable housing in San Francisco than in the other counties. Insurance status for EMA, and this one has, this one does add up to more than 100% because people change insurance within the year fairly frequently, and that gets reported by multiple service providers in ARES. So private insurance is the smallest category. Medicare is the second to largest. Medicaid is definitely the largest for our population. No insurance is also rather significant, and this includes Healthy San Francisco for the San Francisco part of the EMA, and other represents a variety of different things, but is also significantly reported. And eligible metropolitan antiretrovirals by race, by and large, and this is the old data, we're thinking this might go down partly due to data completeness issues in the new version of the presentation, but by and large, almost everybody in San Francisco, Marin, and San Mateo are prescribed antiretrovirals. And the percentages are generally 96.5 and above for all races, but there are some differences in who's less likely to be prescribed. And then that same antiretrovirals by age is fairly similar in that it's, you know, above 95% for everyone, but there are some age cohorts that are a little better off. And antiretrovirals by gender, this one has a little bit more of a disparity, but also still, well, maybe it's similar. 2 to 2.6% are the number of people who we don't in ARES know are prescribed ART. It doesn't mean they're not prescribed ART in their medical system or record. It just means it hasn't made it into ARES. So this is probably an overreport of that. Eligible metropolitan viral load by race. And this is one slide that we do plan to change and would just like to double check that with you guys. So in the ARES reports, the default categories for viral load are up to 50 for, you know, like the test can't detect a viral load. A lot of the test sensitivity is to 40 or 50. And then there's 51 to 199 and then 200 and above. We plan to collapse the 51 to 199 into with the under 50 to have one under 200 category. So it aligns with, you know, viral suppression rates, how we typically measure them, and U equals U. We are almost to the last slide, so I guess I'll let you think about that and comment at the end, because we're moments away from the end. And that affects all the slides. I forgot to talk about race on this one. So there are some race ethnicity differences, certainly, and we hope these have gotten smaller by the time we report the newer data. Some of the QI data suggests these will have gotten smaller, but reported. And viral load by age is reported here. This is a little more consistent with the younger people, a little more likely to have not suppressed viral load. And the middle category also a little less likely, and over 65 being the most likely to be virally suppressed. And viral load by gender is pretty consistent in terms of viral suppression, with the largest disparity being among transgender clients, being up to 20% not suppressed, although that we think will have changed by the next, by the final version of this report. And that is our last slide for now. So we seek your feedback. And we're sorry we didn't have the newer data to report. We turned this around pretty quickly. So Maria and Flora and the team have been working on it, but it is not in the final form yet.
It's fine.
And Matt Sicily already gave us their data very kindly quickly for the other counties. So thank you, Matt, on the phone.
So first we have a question from Ken about insurance again, so we can go really quickly back up to the insurance slide.
Yeah, my question was about the Medi-Medi. Mm-hmm. Do we have any sense of, are most of our Medicare Medi-Medis?
They're falling into both of these categories in this particular chart. We'll check with Marie and Flora if we can tell who's in Medi-Medi.
No.
I would just comment that someone who's a Medi-Medi is mm-hmm. in far better shape than someone who's just Medi-Cal or Medicare for that matter. It might be good for us to know that.
This is Matt. I don't think Aries pulls that. Aries isn't able to separate that.
Okay.
It isn't, from what I understand. And it's just not in Aries, the options for collecting the data are just not good. It's as it's reported by the client and collected and entered. We've done training and retraining on like Healthy San Francisco and where that should go, that is no insurance and not other, but it's often put in other, and it's a snapshot, but it should be taken with a grain of salt because
I might ask why I put it in if it's so, I mean.
It's required for HRSA.
Yeah.
It's required to be in Aries for HRSA, but it doesn't have to be
not
in this
required in our report. And that's my whole point.
So the idea is this might be more confusing than it is valuable information.
Yes.
I wonder if in other federal programs, sometimes the how many people have no insurance is pretty important. But actually I see why that is confusing here too, due to healthy, this is confusing area. Dean looks like he's got
it. Yeah, it gets confusing, like a dental provider. If someone doesn't have dental insurance, they're going to put no insurance, right? But they might have health insurance. So it also isn't like the complete picture, you know what I mean, of how we would look at information on a service-by-service kind of level.
Yeah, and like Dean said, it's a snapshot too. So let's say that it's during the intake, the person comes in and they have no insurance and they get marked as having no insurance. But then say 3 months down the road, they do get Medi-Cal. Somebody may not go back into their record until the next year when they're updating it. So it's a snapshot of what was happening when that person kind of got registered.
So isn't it all the more reason why if some data is so confusing and so incomplete that we not include it in a report we're giving to council members who are getting a lot of data anyway?
It's kind of the same thing though with housing, I would say. Housing is a snapshot. And I think if you throw out everything, you just have to understand that it's a snapshot and that things change, that there's fluidity.
So Matt, maybe you can tell us on how do you use snapshots when they are so fluid and so distorted?
It gives you a general sense.
Like in general, most of our clients are on Medicaid.
Yeah, it's giving you the general sense.
Okay.
So are we tentatively leaving the slide in for now, or I think it sounds like it could go either way? Okay, so I see some nodding. We'll leave it in for now, but think about how to message when we get to this slide.
Yeah.
To do a better job of saying it's not just that the categories overlap, but also people's conditions change, you know, with enrollments and such.
Exactly. And Beth and I are presenting this very quickly for you all to get a sense of the information that's here and the layout and the flow. But when it's being presented, there will be more detail that Flora and Maria will give you. And they, you know, like there might be more information here about what's included in other and why we broke it out this way. So there will be notes that they'll have that they'll develop to give to all of you. And they'll be highlighting specific, you know, pieces of the information that we really didn't do. So the presentation will be different, but we will look at perhaps pulling it if it seems confusing or not helpful. I will say that the housing collecting and reporting of that data has gotten, it seems to have gotten a lot better in our system from specifically within our DPH in Ward 86 efforts to really kind of collect, track, and update that information. So, if Beth, does that sound accurate?
It does, and it's still improving.
And it's still improving.
Yeah. So it'll be yet better next year.
Yeah.
Great. I think you had one more question for us on that in terms of.
Yes, the cutoff for viral load suppression. I think we'd feel more comfortable just having two parts of these pie charts, having 200 above and zero to under 200 or under 200 for virally suppressed. I think sometimes clinically the information on who's between 50 and 200 can be useful for physicians or medical teams, but generally speaking for a patient or for an outside assessment of how the community health is doing, I think it's of the same consequence, whether somebody is 100 or, you know, 33. For our purposes. So, and also just, we don't like to contravene the U equals U messaging at all. So we don't want to suggest there's a health difference, and that's why we're making pie charts the way we are.
Okay. So Jesse agrees, and thank you for that distinction, because I know I use the 50 and below, but if for like things for the presentation purposes, and I think also for the state, I think they use 200 and below. You know, I think it depends on what we want to align ourselves with. So if it's about presenting to the community at large, you know, unless there's any other ideas, you know, I think I'm willing to sort of go along with what is best for these kind of presentations versus clinical. Are there any other sort of ideas or inputs from council members?
I would agree with 200 because what Beth was saying, the U equals U, also how HRSA reviews it as below 200. So, and there's, you know, and you know, different tests. I know that our public health lab that does all of our viral loads for Edison Clinic, they go down to 38. So it's 38 and below. And so it's, I mean, it's all over the board. So that's why I think best if we just have the one 200 that kind of covers goes across the board for most entities.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds like unless there's any objection, I think we're comfortable going with 200 moving forward.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or any other sort of input for the team before we move on to the next item? I don't see any. All right, great, fantastic. Thank you so much, Beth. Thank you so much, Dean. Great, awesome. So next we have, I think that's it, right? So next meeting for us will be September 14th. Oh wait, the date, right. Mark, please.
Yes, there is a request to change the meeting date from the September 14th to September 21st. The request is coming from me because September 14th is my birthday. Please put that in your calendars. And I just can't imagine a meeting without me. If you want to continue on, you certainly can. But if you're able to move it a week later, I would love to be a part of that meeting because it is a summit meeting. So we'll be going over our prioritization and our resource allocation scenarios. It's up to you all. Jackson, anyone else in?
I'm fine. Anybody else? How about people who are not okay with the moving the date?
All right. Great.
I don't see anybody saying no. Great. We're moving the date. So yeah, so next meeting will be September 21st, same time, 3 o'clock. And hopefully, you know, we'll get a reminder from the staff about that.
Happy early 60th, Mark.
Well, that was a diss. That wasn't a happy birthday.
Happy thank diamond anyway, celebration. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for today's meeting. But a reminder, when's the full meeting? It's the 30th, right? Full council meeting is the 30th?
I'm going to just say yes. That sounds yes. Right. Fourth Monday.
Okay. Yeah. All right, y'all. Thank you so much, and please enjoy the rest of your day.
Bye, everyone.
The 23rd.
Oh, 23rd. I meant the 23rd. Yes.
Of course. Yes.
Bye, everyone.